I'm Dr. Sue Bailey, and I have a blog called Cambridge Foodies. I've been involved in food probably for as long as I can virtually remember, in terms of both lecturing and teaching, originally in Saffron Walden, just outside Cambridge, and then in London, and then now, of course, back in Cambridge again. Why am I interested in Fanny Craddock, you may well ask? Well, basically, she was one of the very first celebrity chefs. There was Philip Harbin on television, and then there was Fanny Craddock, and there was no one else like Fanny Craddock. I decided that I wanted to go a little bit Fanny-esque, darlings, and did a celebrity Fanny special last Christmas, about this sort of time last Christmas, at the Museum of Cambridge, actually as Fanny, and recreating a lot of her recipes, which was brilliant fun. So I suppose you could say, although I'm a food scientist by background, I'm also a culinary historian. And I just think she's such a character. Darlings, perhaps you would like to get and to understand the real magic of Fanny Craddock. For those of you who are a little bit young, you might not know about Fanny Craddock. She was a single parent. She decided that one of the ways to make some money was to marry it. And then she married it again. And then her second husband, he, again, I think, met an accident. She did actually marry bigamously and eventually got married to Johnny Craddock after she'd adopted his name, about 30 years plus after she first started associating with him. So she was a bit of a one, really. She was one of the very first people post-war who was trying to make food a little bit exciting again, because obviously everyone had had the deprivations of being on rationing. And in fact, rationing went on until the mid-1950s. So anyone who's in their sort of 60s now will have actually experienced the effects of rationing. And so basically Fanny Craddock decided, you know, let's help the housewife. And of course, it was always the housewife rather than the house husband, to try and do exciting, interesting cooking. And she also was very much against ready-prepared food, even though she would actually decide that she would use, you know, ready-made puff pastry sometimes if she couldn't quite make her own or could get one of her assistants to make it for her. She really was very much into using fresh produce, very much into growing her own food, and just generally being almost a sort of modern-day type of foodie. But, of course, she's probably best remembered for her weird and wonderful concoctions. So, what about Christmas? What about Christmas with Fanny? She was one of those people who decided that Christmas preparations needed to start in January. So, Fanny would decide that everything had to have an action plan. So, an action plan and lists were what you needed to do to make sure that everything was well in hand for Christmas. So, I'm going to give you a flavour of some of the type of recipes that she did at Christmas time. And you will please excuse me if I drop into slight Fanny mode. So, this time last year, I was demonstrating as Fanny Craddock, and I was doing this for the Museum of Cambridge, and it was a little bit of a fundraiser for them. And I decided that the Fanny persona was one I really rather enjoyed, darlings. So, one of the first things I demonstrated to them was this beautiful sausage roll. Now, I'm not talking dinky little sausage rolls here. No, no, no. You make a big one, and the big one you make with a whole garlic sausage. And I'm not talking little ones. I'm talking, you know, a foot long garlic sausage, which you can still get hold of course, because I managed to find one. And then you cover it in half a pound of puff pastry. Now, of course, you should use butter puff pastries. Don't use one of those inferior ones made with margarine. Ugh, no, ugh, tastes would be disgusting. And then you spread, so you get your large oblong of puff pastry, roll it out so it's a nice size, and then you put your garlic sausage down the middle, and then you get some French mustard, or made English mustard, perhaps mix the two together, and then you spread that all over the top of the garlic sausage. And then you wrap the puff pastry around it, turn it upside down so that the little seal is underneath, because you don't want a seal on top making a mess. And then, with all your spare trimmings, you then turn them into a little plait and plait them along the top of your sausage roll. So it's a bit like a giant cracker, really. And then you put an egg wash on top. Now, the way the little Fanny's little special tip here was that you put a bit of salt in with your egg, and that makes it go much further. And then you can egg wash the top of your sausage roll, and then you bake it, of course, on a baking sheet, which you've already pre-prepared, and then you put that into the oven, bake at 425 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, for those people who still think in Fahrenheit, gas mark 7, or centigrade 210 degrees. But of course, you've got a fan oven, turn it down a little bit as well. And then you cook it until it's really nice and crisp and golden on top, and your sausage is heated all the way through. And then you just slice it up. I think people thought whatever was this thing going to taste like. Actually, it all got eaten, so it was rather nice. And then another thing to make. Now, again, very festive. And one of the things that Fanny always wanted to do at Christmas was make a bit of a splash. So she'd either use a red tablecloth or a white tablecloth or a white sheet, if she was being clever and it was a big table. Then she'd do swags of holly all along the edge. And then she would spread out her festive fare all on the top of her buffet table. So, of course, you'd have your puff pastry or saucisse à la feuilleté, which she used to call it, because she loved talking in French, because that sort of showed her off in a good light. And she liked Escoffier, who was her sort of, if you like, hero in the culinary world. So instead of French sausage roll, it was saucisse à l'ail, as in l'ail garlic, feuilleté. And I do apologise for any French listeners here. I probably mismangled and mispronounced that very badly. So you've got your lovely big sausage roll there. Then you've got tomato wheels. Now, you need nice firm tomatoes for this. And you need processed cheese. Now, processed cheese, make sure you get a good quality one, because I'm afraid when I did this last year, my slices were a bit flobby, and you must have one that stands up nice and firmly, because what you actually have to do is that you cut your processed cheese into little circles with a fluted cutter, not a plain cutter, just a fluted cutter, and then you need some cream or cottage cheese, and then you need your tomatoes. So what you do, you pre-cut your tomatoes into 8. Only do them about 2 hours before, because they'll go a little bit mushy and mushy until then. And then you put your cream cheese in your piping bag, and then you pipe that into the middle of your tomatoes so that you've got something to stick your processed cheese slices into. And then you just sprinkle a little bit of walnut on top, and then a little piece of parsley. And so they really look quite pretty. And they're bright red, so, you know, they make the festive table look even more festive. Lipitor cheese. Now, do you know what Lipitor cheese is? Well, cream cheese, you know, we always have cream cheese in the back of the fridge. Well, of course you should if you're pre-prepared and well-prepared, as Fanny always was. You mix some paprika, some salted butter with your cream cheese. So 4 ounces cream cheese, that's 100 grams for those people who think in metric, and 1 well-rounded teaspoon of paprika, 4 ounces or 100 grams slightly salted butter, softened a bit, and then a heaped teaspoon of chopped caraway seeds. And apart from your heaped teaspoon chopped caraway seeds, 6 finely pressed capers squeezed in a cloth and chopped finely. So it's not too acrid, not too vinegary, darling. And again, a rounded teaspoon of French mustard. And if you wish, you can put in there as well a wiped chopped anchovy fillet, just to give it a little bit of extra zing. and a bit of harmless blue food colouring. Because, again, Fanny liked her food colouring. And what you then do is you mix all this up into a block, and then you put the block on your plate, and then you get some pretzels, those nice little sort of, you know, heart-shaped biscuits, the one with the little twisty biscuits. And then you put the twisty biscuits around the side, and then more twisty biscuits, and then you can just eat this as a sort of dip. To go back on with the food colouring, then you do this lovely thing, and I did these, and I think I put them on this, you know, this newfangled device. I think it's called Twitter. And Fanny would have been very proud because I had some lovely green retro food colouring, and I had some hard-boiled eggs. Now, once you've hard-boiled your eggs, take the shells off, and then put a few drops of food colouring in some water, pop your eggs into the water, and this is green food colouring, mind, and then lo and behold, after probably about 5 minutes soaking in there, they will turn blue. And so these lovely hard-boiled eggs, which she called egg barrels, or barrels, but I think she meant barrels, or œufs à la Riga, which was her other name for it, which was basically, once you have made your lovely blue eggs, you then cut them in half, you mix a little bit of your mayonnaise with some anchovy fillets, again, put them into a piping bag with a nice little fluty nozzle on it, and then pipe that into your blue eggs. And really, they look quite festive. They tasted fine. Yes, looked a bit odd, but tasted fine. And another savoury dish was vol-au-vents. Now, I'm sure you all know what vol-au-vents are. Yes? Yes, of course, they're those little circular cases with little tiny lids on them. And Fanny had a very good idea as to how you could fill them. Now, if you're very clever, then you'll make up a nice white sauce, or perhaps you might make some other type of filling. But Fanny had a shortcut, and Fanny was very clever at her shortcuts and the odd bit of promotion as well. So basically, concentrated mushroom soup or concentrated chicken soup. And of course, she would name check Campbell's because she realised they were the best quality. And then all you have to do is put that in your little vol-au-vent cases. And if you wish to warm them up, that's fine. But if you wish to have it cold, then that's fine too. You might think it tastes disgusting, but no, Fanny would assure you. And as the people who ate these, they all went, it actually tasted rather fine. When I did this talk last year, I was also giving a little bit of information about Fanny herself. Fanny was one of these people who you couldn't quite believe all the different types of things that she ended up doing. And the first part of her life was actually quite a tricky time in her life. She basically was forced into marriage, her second marriage. Her first marriage was when she was 17. And then she met this RAF pilot who was called Sidney Evans. And then 3 months after she married him, he suffered a fatal crash and she was widowed and pregnant 3 weeks after her 18th birthday. So she then, the year after, was forced into marriage with a guy called Arthur Chapman. And he was a bit wild and he was drinking heavily to dull the pain of a leg injury that he'd sustained in a serious motorcycle accident. And she got pregnant again. But unfortunately for her, he decided that he wanted to give up drinking and became, as far as Fanny was concerned, terribly boring. So she decided that she wanted to divorce him. By that stage, he'd become a convert to Catholicism and refused to grant her a divorce. And so she left him anyway, and left him to bring up her second son. And then she lived in a squalid bedsit in Kensington with her 2-year-old son Peter, and was dusted down to her last few pennies, and she used to lock the little boy in the room each day while she went out to work. Yes, I think nowadays that would be totally illegal. But anyway, that's what she did. And she went to wash up in a canteen and sold vacuum cleaners door to door. And then his paternal grandparents adopted him on the condition that Fanny had no further contact with him till she was 21. When she married again, she married Greg Holden Dye, and he was a rich young playboy. Because she'd lost contact with Arthur Chapman, and although she actually placed a newspaper advert saying she was getting married, she didn't hear anything from him, and therefore she persuaded herself and her fiancé he was dead, or probably dead, and therefore she married him. In fact, she bumped into him, this is Mr. Arthur Chapman, when by chance in London. And then, in fact, although the marriage to Greg Holden Dye was bigamous, she'd actually already left him for Johnny Craddock, and he was a married man with four children. He became her right-hand man in the cookery demonstrations and her foray into television. And because Arthur Chapman refused to divorce her, she changed her name to Craddock by deed poll. And they set up home together in a dilapidated cottage near Stratford-on-Avon. And then she decided to write a recipe book called The Practical Cook, and this was published in 1949. And this was when food rationing was in force, and she was doing recipes such as rose petal jam and baked hedgehog. Nice. Perhaps I won't bake one for Christmas. And it was a great hit, and then she got invited to do demonstrations at luncheon clubs. In fact, before then, she and Johnny had made quite a name for themselves by becoming a duo, Bon Viveur, and they went around reviewing restaurants and so travelled all over England and the continent, of course, and reviewing restaurants. And so that was sort of honing her skills and her personality and her knowledge of food. She is credited with introducing the great British public to unusual dishes from France and Italy, popularising pizza and prawn cocktail. She also suggested that everything should have a French name to bring the Escoffier standard into the British kitchen. She worked for the British Gas Council, she appeared at trade shows, in the Ideal Home exhibition. She made what we would now call infomercials. So information commercials, instructing cooks, newlywed women on how to use gas cookers for basic dishes. And that was part of her fame. And then she transferred to television and the BBC used to publish her recipes regularly. And then she was a celebrity chef of the day. And they had a TV career that spanned nearly 20 years. Her very well-known series that always seems to get rolled out now at Christmas time is Fanny Craddock Cooks for Christmas. So what happened to Fanny? Well, why did she disappear off the radar? Well, what happened in 1976, she was on Esther Ranson's show, and it was called The Big Time, and it was giving amateurs a chance to take on tasks normally performed by professionals. And Esther Ranson had invited a Devon housewife named Gwen Truke to prepare a banquet for the former Prime Minister Edward Heath. And she openly sneered, now, unfortunately for Fanny, she openly sneered on television at Mrs. Troke and pretended to retch as she described her menu. And Fanny was really unpleasant. And that really was the curtains for her television career. And then, in fact, she died in 1994. She kept going a long, long time. I think an awful lot of people, perhaps, will have just saw her as a bit of a figure of fun, but she did actually know what she was doing. And she used to boss her assistants around absolutely horrendously. And of course, get them to do an awful lot of the work for her, which is very clever. She was almost overacting when she did things. I think people do things fairly sort of normally now, but there's still always the pre-preparation that goes on for any type of television show. And in fact, it's often done by home economists or people behind the scenes making the dishes, even on things like Great British Bake Off, where in fact I did one of the cakes for that, which I think I'm sure people thought Paul Hollywood made. And so I did the Savoy cake for them for the British Bake Off. In terms of her legacy, I don't think people do plain cooking in the way that Fanny did plain cooking. Now it's combinations of unusual ingredients and trying to use, if you like, fairly authentic ingredients on the whole. But having said that, she was into using authentic ingredients and using fresh ingredients when she could, although she wouldn't be adverse to using tinned peas, for example, for garnishes, because if one thinks back, frozen peas had only just begun to come on stream. And of course, she was out there promoting frozen peas as soon as they did. I think she has left a legacy in the sense that she was an entertainer first and foremost, and people like to be entertained. And food is aspirational, and she did food aspirationally for people. And she was trying to show people actually wasn't that difficult to cook yourself. And so, in fact, when she stopped being on television, this was when Jamie Oliver was, you know, about sort of 11 years old. And he then did the sort of bish bash bosh style of cookery, which was you don't have to be quite so formal. You don't have to be mannered or manicured. And she was very much the mannered, manicured, high eyebrowed, ultra dressed up show person. She really, really was. Fanny's Royal Mincemeat Galette. Now, she suggested that in the same way as you don't want to have silly little sausage rolls, you don't need to have silly little mince pies. So, what you do instead is you get your puff pastry, and then you get a pound of currants, and oh goodness me, what is that in metric? That would be, pound of currants is about 500 grams, let's say, 500 grams of currants, pound of chopped raisins, 500 grams of chopped raisins, that is, pound of sultanas, 500 grams, and then 1.5 pounds of suet. Now, of course, you want your mixture of this. You would actually be then adding to this a pound of dark soft brown sugar, not demerara, she would say, because demerara is too crunchy. You don't want that in your mincemeat. And then a pound of peeled, cored, then weighed apples, because again, you take the peel off, take the cores out, and then chop those finely. Grate rinds of 3 oranges and 2 lemons. Add in a teacup full of rum and a teacup full of brandy. Strain juice of 1 orange and 1 lemon. And then put all the ingredients in a big roomy bowl, mix thoroughly, and, you know, as Fanny would like to do, often she would wash her hands, of course, make sure she scrubbed under her nails, get her hands in there and wadge it all up herself, and then pack it into sterilised jars, and then store in a dry place. And if you're terribly efficient like Fanny, you would have made this at least 6 months before, so it would matured nicely. And then if you open it, it's a bit dry, you can revive it with a splash of orange juice, rum and brandy. If you're going to put it in a dessert and you're not going to cook the dessert, you actually do need to cook the mincemeat. But if you're going to do it in her galette, what you need is your 1/2 pound of puff pastry, and then you cut that into a big circle, put that onto a damp baking tray because that will help your galette to slide off there nicely when you put the filling in. So you've got a large dinner plate size circle of puff pastry. Then you put your lovely mincemeat mixture on top. Then you put another lid on top, again another dinner plate size piece of pastry. Then you seal it very well around the edge because you don't want any of the filling to ooze out and look a bit nasty. And then you bake it again 170 degrees centigrade until golden brown, and that's about 20 minutes in all to do that. And that's also gas mark 6. Before you do that, before you put it in the oven, though, don't forget to do the extra fanny touch, which is brushing the top of your galette with egg white, just lightly beaten egg white, and then sprinkle it with icing sugar. And then you'll get a lovely crispy crust on top. And then if you wish, a little extra dusting of icing sugar on top, just to resemble snow. So Fanny would then have put this on her buffet table. And also she would put on her buffet table would be the two specials that she thinks no Christmas buffet is should be without. First one is choux pastry swans. Now, choux pastry you might think is difficult to make. Not if you follow Fanny's recipes. Not if you follow her instruction. And so to make the choux pastry swan, good idea to use plain flour. So 8 ounces of plain flour, so that's 200 grams plain flour, 8 fluid ounces of water, 8 fluid ounces of milk, and then butter. Now, I haven't got down here the exact amount of butter, so I will perhaps put this recipe up on my blog so that if anyone wants to find out how to make it in detail, then you can check on that. It's a little bit tricky to do, and you have to pipe the body separately, and you have to pipe the neck separately, and then you have to cut the top off the choux buns once they're cooked to make the little wings, and then you pipe cream inside and then place the wings on the little swans. And if you're doing it nicely, then you will put it on a mirror. This your flotilla of swans on a glass mirror, and then make it snow, you know, just icing sugar over the top, and then your little swans, and of course there's so many lovely little swans in Cambridge, are then swimming their way down the River Cam on in a snowstorm, which we've seen very recently. And then the last special, which I'm going to give you the recipe for, is banana candles. Now, this was suggested for children's birthday parties, and I've talked to a few people who actually do remember their mummies making this for them for their birthday parties. And what you need is pineapple rings, those nice pineapple rings that you can get in tins, perhaps with natural juice rather than syrup, because, you know, we're trying to be slightly health conscious here. And then bananas, and you must have straight bananas. You do not want bendy bananas. And then you need, if you wish, chopped nuts and green angelica, but what you also need is glacé cherries, and you need some fat, you need a fatless sponge. So I'm afraid when I did this, I cheated and I used pre-made sponge. Now, Fanny might have said that was acceptable, and if not, you would make your own whisked fatless sponge recipe. Then you cut out circles, and then so you have a little circle exactly to fit the pineapple ring. Then, so you have a circle of the sponge, then you have the circle of pineapple, then you stick your banana upright into the pineapple ring. And to turn it into a candle, what you then need to do is dip a little hole in the top of the candle with a cocktail stick, making a nice little hole for your slice of red glacé cherry to go in, and it looks just like a candle, darling. If you wish to make it extra messy, what you can do is you can actually roll your bananas in a bit of raspberry jam and then roll it in nuts, and then you've got nutty Christmas banana candles. Everyone really loves them. They look so festive. I'm Dr. Sue Bailey. This is Fanny's Fabulous Cambridge Christmas. Fanny always always thought it was important to have special drinks at Christmas. And this was one of her favourite recipes. And again, I made this for the Museum of Cambridge last year, and it went down an absolute treat. And it's called the Grand Old English Wassail Bowl. And these are all Fanny's recipes, all from her part work, all from the original part works, not adapted at all, because what I wanted to do was make sure I followed Fanny's instructions to the letter. So, you need 1/4 pint of water, and then you need level teaspoon powdered nutmeg and powdered cinnamon, 3 cloves, 1/4 teaspoon mace, 1/2 flat teaspoon allspice, 1 pound of preserving sugar, or ordinary sugar will do, in fact, is if it's granulated, that's absolutely fine. Then 1/2 bottle of brown sherry, as she liked to call it, and then 1/2 bottle of Malmsey. Now, if you can't get hold of Malmsey, any sort of nice, strong, fortified wine will do. Possibly she might allow port to be used in place of it. And then 1 3/4 pints of old ale. And then 6 very small eating apples. Heat it all up. Mix it together and then serve it nice and hot. What you can do is float the little small eating apples on top, and then you've got your festive wassail bowl. But, of course, for those people who are driving, then what she would suggest is a non-alcoholic punch. And that would just be 4 oranges, 1/4 pound of sugar, soda water and some ice to make orangeade. And so you basically take your peel from your orange, place it in the jug with juice and sugar, pour over 1/2 pint of boiling water, cool, strain, and then serve 1 part orangeade to 3 parts soda water with crushed ice. And there you have a lovely festive drink. She has got a lot of other drinks, which I will talk about in a few minutes. Probably still get a lot of the bog standard stuff. Certain things, like, for example, she often suggested making your own fondant icing rather than royal icing, because royal icing would tend to crack one's teeth. And so therefore, she suggested making fondant icing with glycerin. But again, this is something where people will tend to buy fondant icing now rather than make their own. And I admit, I've done exactly the same, although I have, in fact, got glycerin. You can get glycerin now in a supermarket. You don't have to go to the chemist to get it. Other things I would say really are a bit weird. I mean, there's one lovely recipe for Christmas called cold milk punch. It's with lemon, cinnamon, nutmeg, caster sugar, boiled milk, brandy, rum, boiling water. And then you basically soak the peel in the rum, peel the lemons, keep the juice separate. Add this, add the rum and the peel into a bowl with brandy and the cinnamon, the nutmeg, the sugar. Stir it to dissolve. Add boiling milk that's going to curdle. And then add boiling water. Cover with a cloth for 24 hours. Strain a bottle. Keep at least 2 weeks before serving. Blech! I don't think I really fancy trying that one. A lot of her other recipes, like negus, for example, which is port, nutmeg, lemon and boiling water. Again, it's recipes you probably still see in a magazine today. And there's another one, Churchward, and there's another one called Glog. And these are perfectly sensible recipes. And when I did the demonstration, I also bought things like cheesy footballs and Twiglets. Jacob's cheesy footballs, yeah, you can still get hold of them. Mm. Yeah, and Twiglets, of course. And things like After Eight Mints. You know, they're retro and they've come back into fashion again. And there is this amazing 70s retro cookery book that's got pictures of all the retro foods. And then there is another, a friend of mine who has a blog which is all based on all Fanny's recipes, and he's been cooking his way through all the vegetarian Fanny recipes that there are. But she got a lot of useful tips. You know, she suggested, for example, if you wanted to stuff a turkey, put the stuffing in a piping bag with a big hole on it, and then just basically squidge the stuffing into the turkey by doing that. clever idea. Yeah. All those sort of little tips and tricks, which she would suggest that actually are still quite sensible things to do now. People actually had to do an awful lot more things by hand. Yes. So things like washing machines, you'd have a boiler, not a washing machine. You'd have a wringer or a mangle. You wouldn't have a spin dryer. There were no microwaves around because those were only used in catering and people were actually quite scared of them to start off with. You didn't have automatic timers on ovens. Yes, you would have had hoovers and vacuum cleaners, things like that. But in terms of labour saving, people actually had to plan their time efficiently. And this was one of the things that she was perhaps helpfully trying to get people to do. And, you know, suggesting shortcuts. And if you plan properly and if you organised yourself, then actually things would be a bit easier. She was probably a bit over the top, though, in the way she suggested things. I don't think most people will start planning for Christmas in January as soon as you've only got over one Christmas. So that's a bit too much. Some very, very nice things to do with mincemeat. And it's one of those things you often find if you're making your own mince pies, which perhaps people don't do nowadays. But it's something where it's very festive and people think mincemeat is a Christmas type thing. And in fact, if you go back historically, mincemeat actually had meat in it. And they used to be called coffin pies, and they were like almost little crib-shaped pies, and they actually had meat in them. And that the only remnant that we've got there now is suet. And obviously that can be vegetarian. It doesn't have to be a beef or meat-type suet. But that's why we still have suet in mincemeat, because it's the hangover from when it was the sort of the savoury, it was a savoury rather than a sweet dish. And in fact, some people are now making savoury mince pies in London. I don't think anyone's done it in Cambridge yet. This is a different types of things to do with your mincemeat. And she had an amazing Christmas book. Fanny said you needed to cope with Christmas, and that was the name of her first book. And she published this in 1968, but the whole idea was to relax at Christmas, but in fact, almost what she was suggesting was almost over-preparation and fancy this up, do that, be quite clever if you can. And so with mincemeat, this is one of her favourite things to reuse mincemeat in a whole range of different ways. So quite apart from the mincemeat galette, then she would do a Swiss roll filled with mincemeat. She would do pancakes filled with mincemeat. She would do even a whisked Swiss-type omelette filled with mincemeat. Now, I don't think I fancy that somehow, but, you know, this was one of the things that she suggested could actually be a whole range of uses for mincemeat, particularly if you'd made it 6 months and you've got a whole load sculling around in your kitchen anyway. Always, she suggested do your preparations early. So, Christmas cake, she had two versions of Christmas cake. The first one was her grandmother's rich fruit cake and what she called a spit new one. And her spit new one was a white Christmas cake, which in fact, of course, is beige. But the idea here was that it had glacé pineapple, oranges, coloured cherries and angelica. Now, do you know what angelica is? It's little green strands, in fact, from a plant, the angelica plant, which is candied. I do have my own angelica plant. I have not yet candied it. I can't quite get around to that one yet. And it's made with self-raising flour and corn flour and basically mixed by hand, put lots of alcohol in it and then baked so that it's all ready for Christmas. And one of her tips, again, to check whether a cake is baked or not is listen to your cake. When it comes out of the oven, it should not be singing. So it shouldn't be just sort of singing or hissing gently to itself. And as she suggested, if you are hard of hearing, use a skewer instead. And then that should come out with no bits of cake mixture sticking to it. And then feed it with brandy and ideally make it a year in advance. So again, if you're Fanny, you get well prepared. Once you've baked your cake, then if you're Fanny, you do not use marzipan because that really has rather a nasty taste. And you should use proper almond paste, which is ground almonds, icing sugar, raw egg whites and orange flower water and rose flower water. So you get actually really rather a nice tasting almond paste. But Fanny got very irritated one day when she was doing her demonstration at the Royal Albert Hall for Christmas, which she often did, because this woman said that Fanny had got the recipe wrong. No, Fanny had not got the recipe wrong at all. This silly woman, instead of using a flavoured flower water, rose or orange, used face cream instead. She got confused when she was at the chemist. Fanny thought she was a total idiot, but refrained from saying so. That's basically, Fanny hated criticism from viewers if they did not follow her recipes to the T. So the whole point about Fanny is that she expected you to read the recipe, assemble all your ingredients, get organised, do them properly, and then you wouldn't be fussing or fannying about. Another tip, if you're using fondant icing on top of the cake, which you can make quite easily with glycerin, then roll it out on corn flour, not icing sugar, because that stops it sticking. So if you're doing your Christmas cake, if you're a bit late, which perhaps you are, if you're just doing your Christmas icing for your cake now, use corn flour, not icing sugar. One of the things that Fanny would also suggest is that you make your own Christmas pudding. And she also decided that rather than have a bought one, what you should do is make your own and make a large circular one. Then boil it once you've got the fruits and you have fruits, breadcrumb, ginger, suet, nuts and alcohol. And of course, she gave a detailed recipe in her booklet for this. And then you add chopped apples, eggs, citrus juices, beer and brandy. And you leave it overnight to rest. And so the breadcrumbs soak up all the alcohol. Then you put it into the right shape of pudding basin, if you wish to use that, or what I would suggest is put it into a pudding cloth. One of the things, if you want to make an authentic Christmas pudding, is to form it into a ball shape. Now, in fact, I had great fun doing this with doing the pudding, the Cambridge pudding that I did for the Great British Bake Off with Sandy Tosfig, which we filmed in Queen's College. And this was the forerunner of the Monday Christmas pudding, because it was a boiled pudding. They used to use basically intestines to bake the puddings in. Not so nice. A bit like haggis, I suppose, but, you know, haggis being a sort of savoury thing in guts, as now is. And sausages, you know, still using, in, you know, skins, intestines, if they're not artificial skins. So basically with the Cambridge pudding, the thing that was the most important about that was that in the early 16th century, someone in possibly one of the colleges came up with a genius idea of using a boiling cloth. Now, I used a pillowcase. I used an Oxford pillowcase. Of course, that was cut when they were doing the recording. And the key thing about the Cambridge pudding that was different was, although it had a lot of spices in it, it also had a giant pat of butter in the middle, and it also had black pepper in it. Now, Fanny's Christmas pudding would not go quite that far, but she would suggest cooking it in a pudding cloth in the same sort of way, cooking it in a large sphere so that you've got this proper old-fashioned traditional pudding. And then the problem is you have to steam it for her pudding for 10 hours. Now, I did find when doing the Cambridge pudding, yes, you do have to actually boil it or just seethe it gently, cook it gently in water for at least 6 hours to make sure it's properly cooked. And then you reheat it again on consumption. So now, of course, everyone pops their Christmas puddings in the microwave. Before microwaves, you would then have to reheat your Christmas pudding for another 3 hours. So hence, you know, the poor old cook, quite apart from having the turkey to deal with, had the Christmas pudding boiling away as well, if they weren't dealing with the sprouts and all of the other things. So, but Fanny had a very, very clever Christmas tip. Most people like to pour something flaming over the top of their Christmas pudding. What she did was use a mixture of brandy and vodka. That gives the flame a much longer burn time. Basically, what Fanny would suggest is that you just need to Feel the heat with your spotlessly clean finger and check that it's just warm. And then you set it alight and pour it over your pudding. But the person who's carrying the pudding should just wiggle the pudding gently as they're bringing it to the table. And that makes the flames burn even more brightly. So do try that, but of course try it safely. And she would also serve her Christmas pudding with brandy butter. But of course, to add the Fanny-esque touch, she would colour her brandy butter green. Merry Christmas, Fanny. Christmas leftovers. Fanny had answers for your Christmas leftovers as well. And she dedicated part 15 of her part work completely to Christmas leftover. What she suggested is that leftovers, particularly from the cheese board, what you would do is that you would make a nice thick coating type batter. Then you would dip your leftover triangles of cheese into your thick coating batter and then you would deep fry them. And you would have these lovely little sort of puffy cheese nibbles, which you could have after Christmas. So those poor, lonely little leftover bits of cheese, you could turn into something really quite appetising. What else she would suggest is that you would use leftover meat, potatoes and bread into poor man's pizza or croque monsieur. And then you would, any leftover winter vegetables, you would turn into soup and then mince meat into this lovely souffle recipe, and then fancy up potatoes and make perhaps something like a Spanish omelette, except I think, you know, she was, again, quite early. She wouldn't have called it a tortilla. I think she would have called it a Spanish omelette. One of the other Christmas specials she really liked was what she used to call bûche de Noël, Christmas log. To those of you who can't speak French, darling, as well as Fanny could. The idea there was that you'd use a whisked sponge mixture, fatless sponge. So you would use sugar, eggs, and she would often cheat and use self-raising flour. Well, in fact, if you whisk it properly, you can get away with plain flour. And then you take out a tablespoon of flour and replace it with a tablespoon of drinking chocolate. Not cocoa. Cocoa's a bit too bitter. So Fanny suggests you should always use drinking chocolate. And then you could actually whip this up if you've got those neighbours who drop in. You know those neighbours who you haven't got, you don't want to give them the Christmas cake, you haven't made any mince pies, but if you've got Johnny on your side, you'll get him to take them through into the lounge, and then you would whip to the kitchen and you would make your bûche de Noël, because it only takes 9 minutes to bake. So whilst they're thinking that you're making coffee, you're in fact making a lovely bûche de Noël, which you're going to cover with buttercream that's got this coffee mocha, what she said, chocomocha topping on it. And basically that's butter, softened butter, mixed with some icing sugar, a little bit of your drinking chocolate, and a little bit of the coffee that, you know, Johnny has said is being made. And then, whoops, into the living room you go with your chocolate log spread beautifully with the mixture of the buttercream, and then using a fork, or as she suggested, a cocktail stick, to make wavy little lines on it so it looked just like a log. And of course, if you're really clever, what you do is cut off a slice from the end, put it on the side, and then that would look like a log with a little branch coming out of it. And then, of course, if you're really creative, you already have pre-made some nice little fondant, green fondant holly leaves and little red berries, or even pieces of glacé cherry if you couldn't find any red food colouring. And you'd have them on one side, ready to plop onto your log and really impress your neighbours. Fanny's other festive recipe was called a bunt, beer bunt cake. And basically, because she wanted to have a Germanic cake that was in honour of Prince Albert, who's the consort to Queen Victoria, and because, as Fanny said, they brought Christmas to our island, so this was her celebration of that. And so this is called a Christmas beer cake or Bierkuchen. It's not really something, in fact, that I've come across before, but this is a sort of sweet cake stroke sweet bread done in a Bundt tin, and it's cinnamon, nutmeg, cloves, German ale, and then using flour and butter, and you also use treacle in it as well. Then add raisins, and the raisins plump up in the mixture, and then you have self-raising raisin flour in that as well, plus additional baking powder, salt and spices, no eggs. But it actually makes really quite a lovely cake. And it tastes really wintry. Fanny special. I've done quite a lot of research on Fanny because I just find her such a fascinating person. And quite apart from doing the Fanny Craddock Does Christmas, which I did last year, I'm potentially going to be doing another reprise of Fanny for Eat Cambridge. We're planning this at the moment. So when the Eat Cambridge happens in May, June, then look out for Fanny, because she will probably be doing something specially Fanny-like, you know, something spring-like, possibly jellies. We haven't quite worked that one out yet. One of the people that I have got a lot of inspiration and a lot of help from is a charming Scottish guy who has a Twitter and a blog called Keep Calm and Fanny On. And one of the things he does is look at all the vegetarian recipes that Fanny has done. So he's got some recipes in his blog, and I will be crediting him with some of the recipes that I'm going to be putting onto my blog that are Fanny-based recipes. People may wonder what Fanny Craddock has got to do with Cambridge. Well, in fact, interestingly, one of her sons worked at what was then Pi Unicam in Cambridge, and I have just been told that Cambridge 105 is in fact based in one of the old Pi buildings on Guider Street. So, who knew? Perhaps Fanny's son passed through the portals of this institution.